the best and the brightest.
Opportunities.
The next idea.
We're going to find that these social and cultural factors really add a lot to economic growth.
The liberal arts education has its roots all the way back in early medieval Europe, back around the 9th century. In his latest essay for The Next Idea, our partner, Ross School of Business professor Jeff DeGraff, argues that the liberal arts education has the power today to make great and positive changes in helping young people from all backgrounds learn about and then, more importantly, participate in the larger world. Jeff, in your opinion, how has higher education changed with regard to America's class structure?
Well, there's a wonderful cover story about a year ago in The Economist, and it's absolutely paralyzing. And basically what it looked at was class society in America, and it looked at the top 25 universities around the world, which 21 of them are in the United States. I happen to teach at one of them. Mm-hmm. And it looked at the hurdles required to enter into this elite class. And what it was really saying is by the time you're eligible to go to one of these schools, the game is kind of over. You have to have had exposure to the world in a much more profound way as a young person. You must have had a much greater level of participation in the educational system. And even more recently, there's been a New York Times article that said even people who come from a lower socioeconomic background like I did, those people have trouble sustaining their place in society even after they go to an excellent school. So this is really making this argument that universities that used to be our way to stratify, to move up in the world, mm-hmm. have now become barriers and basically the bastions of class society.
And when we talk about a liberal arts education, then, has that stopped becoming a gateway to the middle class?
Well, it has to do with what is a liberal arts education. And I wrote in the article about the history of what's called the trivium and the quadrivium and what every person who went to university should know. And what was really good about a traditional liberal arts education was the emphasis on breadth, on how to think about how the world works in a way where you had what we refer to as cognitive mobility, where you have the ability to understand various areas. And of course, very central to our government, very central to the way that America was formed, the reason that we have these great universities, of course, when the Protestant Reformation came, the key thing was people needed to be able to read and understand the Bible, and that's how we got Harvard and Yale and Princeton, if you know the history of these universities. Yes. And what that really meant at the beginning was we were trying to teach people a quality of thinking. Right? That when you were able to connect the dots, if you will, across these various areas, then you probably were ready to participate in a democracy.
Now, what's outdated about a liberal arts education as we talk right now in 2016?
Well, the notion is whenever you talk about liberal arts education, the issue becomes what's in and what's out.
Yeah.
And what had happened for years is there was what was called the canon, the Western canon. And there were some problems with the canon. But somewhere along the way, what constituted a liberal arts education became very, very muddy. What exactly do you need to read? What kind of mathematics do you need to be able to do, right? What sort of scientific areas of inquiry do you need to have a strong background in? And that's become very muddy across the entire sort of realm or panoply of these liberal arts institutions. And there's been a lot of writing, including that wonderful documentary, if people haven't seen it, The Ivory Tower, where in some senses liberal arts education become playgrounds for young people to sort of have fun and really not focus on quality of mind issues.
One thing that struck me about your essay was how you pointed out a lot of what you describe about traditional liberal arts education is this incredibly passive traditional model where students sit with their notebooks and take notes and they're expected to just receive knowledge in the traditional lecture that we've all been through. And then once they get in the workplace, they're supposed to be active in problem solving and innovative. So how do you fix that? How do you iron out that disconnect?
Well, I think there's a couple ways to do that. And if I might, I'd tell you some of the things that I do with my students. You know, I have these innovation labs, one here and one in Atlanta. And when students come to my class, they actually have to build something, right? Something really significant, like a business model for a public institution or creating jobs in Flint or creating a creativity cluster in downtown Detroit, those kinds of things. Because the way you learn to do anything is by doing it. See one, do one, teach one. And it's not that the education is about doing it. The education is about quality of mind and applying quality of mind to a real subject like you would have done in the Renaissance. You know, now you know about this. How does this work out? And adding adding to knowledge, which I think young people are so good at, and we really need to give them more room to do that. Less passive sort of, here's my smartphone, you know, where is Thumbkin, and more, what are you contributing? The second thing I think you need to do to make them much more active is flip the classroom. And I went to this a couple years ago in my classes where I put all my lectures on video and on the web. And I put the assessments on the web and all the kind of articles I write on the web. And the issue was, do this while you're working out or do this while in your own time. When you come to class, what we're going to do is we're going to actually work through how to apply all this. So you're using the time with your expert or your domain expert more valuably. And I see medical students going through this and having a profoundly positive effect. Mm-hmm. I see this in engineering. So I still think it's liberal arts, but it's that kind of John Dewey, see one, do one, teach one form of liberal arts. Applying all the things, bringing poetry to school, bringing painting to school.
And then you've got those skills up and running when you graduate and come into some company where you're supposed to be part of problem solving and participation.
Yeah, and I think that's the final piece, which is the whole day, the days of knowledge being sort of static is gone. The issue is, I think more and more I see higher education going to certifications, looking like Girl Scout badges or putting Lego together, whatever metaphor you want to make. And the reason is your education doesn't end when you leave college, because knowledge is accelerating at such an incredible speed that you really need to be re-upped, if you will, or recertified, if you will, in areas. And you are seeing this at things like legal and medicine and some areas of engineering now. So you can see how profound that is. And I think business is not going to be far behind.
You address a situation that is way too familiar in Michigan, where students go to college to enable themselves to move up, to enable themselves financially, and they come up with a ready-made mountain of financial debt. What do we do?
Under any scenario, that has to be corrected. And it's even worse than that. The people who've entered the workplace after the Great Recession are, according to most studies, downwardly mobile. The people who entered before, upwardly mobile. And it's not just for the reason of debt. It's also for the reason of where the market is, where they're starting out, what skills they actually do have and don't have. So how you solve that's pretty simple. Should college be for everybody? And I think the answer is yes and no. It should be accessible to everybody, but what constitutes college education is going to be different. Going back to sort of the post-war environment, if we look at what most people need to be employable, they need skills. And I come back to, I think the community colleges are really a gold mine. These are places where people can be skilled up and they can have continuing education. We can also use what are called MOOCs, massive open online courses, which are the best teachers at the best schools, MIT and Stanford and Harvard and Michigan and those places. And they can also participate in those kind of courses so that their intellectual abilities are as high as they want to be. Now, once you're done with that first step, which is very inexpensive comparatively, these are institutions, God bless them, that have basically kept costs in alignment, but they have to be supported publicly. Right? They have to be important to the community. The next step is, if you've done well there and your occupation or aspirations basically look like you want to go farther, then I think you enter into a more traditional university structure. And then, of course, after that, if you show promise, then you enter into something that's more expensive and more specific. And obviously, the more specific and valuable your knowledge is, the more valuable you are in the workplace. So we certainly want people with aspirations. But that bottom of the pyramid that we're starting with everyone is far too cost and labor intensive.
What's the cost to Michigan if we continue along with college / university as usual?
Well, is the model sustainable? I'd like to put it to you this way. I think people have this all wrong. Let me put it this way. The worst of all possible growth strategies is to have an increasing share of a decreasing market. In 1900, the Worthington Saddle Company of Hartford, Connecticut, made 1 million saddles a year. They make about 2,000 saddles now. The best saddle maker in the world is the last one to change. So if you start looking at the top 25, top 40 schools, they're not going to change because they don't need to. They can get the tuition that they need. They're going to have the endowment that they need. Community colleges, on the other hand, have a very good cost structure. They're a very good value, right? So there's not a lot of need in there. Where all the change is going to happen is in those mid-tier schools that basically are having a lot of trouble justifying price, a lot of trouble placing those students when compared to the students who are below, who are more cost-effective, or high, who have more specialized skills. That becomes the challenge. So just like we're getting rid of the middle class, we're having a real problem with those mid-tier institutions, which are invaluable. We need them. We want them. We love them. But the cost basis of those institutions has to dramatically shift.
Very interesting thoughts in Jeff DeGraff's essay, which you will find at the Next Idea page at michiganradio.org. We certainly welcome your comments there. We are on Twitter as well at NextIdeaMI or on Michigan Radio's Facebook page. Jeff DeGraff is our partner in the Next Idea and a professor at the University of Michigan Ross School of Business. Thanks so much, Jeff.
Thank you, Cynthia.
Support for the Next Idea on Stateside comes from Michigan Economic Development Corporation, committed to marketing Michigan to drive job growth and investment in our communities. MichiganBusiness.org.